From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for being there and listening to us all week long. DNC day number two is now in the books. We're at day number three, which will feature the Clintons. Day four, of course, Tim Walz, too, will introduce himself formally. And then Kamala Harris will wrap things up on Thursday. And then we'll have a real race with 75 days left to go. And soon we'll get policies. I think that will make it easier to debate. Because I think the word is phantom. I mean, it is hard for President Trump, not only because he put millions of dollars in a whole convention around beating Biden, and now you have to fight somebody who they're trying to keep from us, literally keep from us knowing anything substantive about the type of 4 years that she will have if she wins election. Rich Lowry at the bottom of the hour, Rob Snyder in 10 minutes. Now Ben Dominic joins us, Fox News contributor, editor-at-large of The Spectator World. Ben, welcome. What do you think so far with day two in the books?
So, Brian, I don't think that my opinion lines up necessarily with what folks might be hearing from the commentators and certainly on other networks. But it's one of the things that, I've been to conventions, I think, as you know.
Yeah, I know.
Going back for, 24 years. I've gone to, started in 2000, going to both of them, and I try to make every one. The thing that really does stick out to me about this convention is the gap between the way it's being framed on air, on media, and the actual reactions and activity of the delegates. The mood here is not what I think is being expressed at all. It is nowhere near the level of quote unquote joy that is being depicted in the media.
Really? In what respect?
There's a lot more. I would say there's a nervous energy here, Brian. It's delegates who basically thought they were signing up, to go in on Joe Biden for one more term, prepared to defend his legacy and the like.
Right.
And now they're kind of caught in this middle where it's like, we're going to criticize him, but also everything he does is good. And, Kamala had everything to do with everything good coming out of this administration and nothing to do with anything bad coming out of this administration. And there's also a nervousness associated with the level of protesters that are out there in the streets who I've been, among over the past couple of days. And I think there is this feeling that they're not sure whether those radicals on the left are going to show up for Kamala the way that they kind of need to in critical states like Michigan. And there's also, I think, an awareness that this is something new. This is something that hasn't been tried before. We've got a mystery box candidate here, and there's not a single issue where she really has dominated or shown her focus in any way to the American people. Americans don't really know who she is, and they really don't have, I think, a good beat on her. It's one of the reasons why I do think the Trump fans campaign has struggled a little bit to define her, to figure out how to come at her. But this is very much a convention that isn't about the issues that voters keep saying that they care about, which is, of course, the economy, immigration, and security, foreign and domestic. And those are right. The consistent top three issues that we've seen. And instead of talking about that, they're talking about race, they're talking about abortion, and they're talking about culture war, because that's what they want this election to be about.
Right. And that's the only thing that they, race is, I was surprised that Michelle Obama went there, although I shouldn't be if you read her bio and how she feels about the country. But she did, basically say that he doesn't like us. He doesn't like us around, which so tell that to Tim Scott. Could you try to mention that to Mike Tyson? I don't know. I don't know what us means.
I'm sorry. I can't. The Obamas for having this hoity-toity attitude about how much, the country needs to end divisiveness and come back together. It seems like every time they give a speech, half of it is divisive and saying that we're in this terrible place, that we're a country who literally elected Barack president twice, okay? And somehow race is like worse than ever, worse than it's ever been. And somehow they get away with this over and over again. They have half of the speech be, we need to end the divisiveness, we need to come together as a nation, and the other half being, well, we're more racist than ever. And I'm just insulted by that, Brian. It's ridiculous.
Oh, I know. I am too. But it was more her than him. I like the whole grandmother thing. I had a white grandmother who basically raised me, and I had a black mother-in-law who I was unbelievably close to, and I couldn't believe how much they had in common. I love that portion of his speech. But I just bring back, I just said to myself, they are asking this country to forget about 3.5 years that Kamala Harris was as unpopular as any vice president in our lifetime. Do you know that the NBC poll in April of 2023 had her approval rating at 32%. 49% was negative. Now she's at 47%. She's only given a mini economic speech, heavily ridiculed even by the Washington Post, and then she leaks out through a surrogate that the corporate tax rate's going up to 28%. I mean, so, okay, do we know the ripple effects on that and what it's going to do to onshoring and everything else that's going to be taking place? Sooner or later, the honeymoon's over when we just get to even any type of facts. For example, Ben, what does she say when asked, would these illegal immigrants come to our country? Should we give them free room, free board, free health care, free education? Because in 2016, when Trump said, no way, sanctuary cities got to go, they thought he was heartless and didn't like Hispanics. Now we're at a different place in our country. So I'm wondering where she's going to stand on stuff that where she stood before and opposed to what Joe Biden has done and she claims to have been a part of.
Well, I think that one of the things that you're going to see is her attempts to navigate this in a way that deals with both what the decisions were made under Joe Biden and what she would do as president is going to be a serious difficulty for
her. It is.
Because, you know, she basically is going to be in a position of she needs to critique or say that she's changing things because she wants to be this candidate of change without also kind of running over all these different policies that she spent the last 3.5 years defending. And look, you don't even have to go back to look at how unpopular she was with the American people. You can go back to this spring. In April and May, there were pieces being written in major journals saying that the key to Joe Biden winning re-election was dumping her off the ticket, was adding one of these, more popular, younger governors or the kind. And that's the kind of thing that, I realize that they want to memory hole this, but they were saying that for a reason. And the reason is that Kamala is just not someone they have a lot of confidence in. Instead, she is a vehicle for them. She is something that you can just, push the policy into her and then she'll spit it out and defend it publicly. Right. And of course, not give any interviews along the way, because that would be too difficult for her to ask even a single serious question from a serious journalist. That's something that apparently you don't have to do now to become president, even as Trump is basically making himself available to literally everyone at all times to talk about just about any issue under the sun.
And it'll be on Fox and Friends tomorrow. Ben, on the protests, are they getting bigger? I know they're hardly controlled. They're well scripted. There's been drilled at these riot police have been drilled at this for months. What are the numbers and what do they want?
Well, this is we always see protests, of course, but this is definitely a more sizable contingent than we normally see at these conventions. I would compare it, in fact, to going back to 08. I was in a group there where they got tear gassed outside of Minneapolis because of those were the anti-globalist protesters back then. This is a pretty sizable contingent. It's younger than it usually is in terms of the representation, but it has been tightly controlled, and the Chicago police have done a great job. I was in the protest at Union Park on Monday, and there was a contingent of counter protesters waving Israel flags, American flags, that did a march through. They actually had posters of Dietrich Bonhoeffer and some other folks who they were carrying through. And that small contingent had at least, close to 100 cops on bikes who immediately surrounded them and protected them as they were going through, being heckled by these frankly pro-Hamas protesters and having epithets shouted at them. And I think that they did a really phenomenal job of that. They also, there was a guy in the crowd who had a baseball bat who they very quickly, right in front of me, swarmed and took the bat away and hauled the guy away, because obviously that kind of thing, can lead to some real disastrous or violent, activity. And I think that they've done a real good job of containing it, except for obviously the sites that we've seen in terms of them going at those barriers. But at the same time, I just think that this is a demonstration of the political frustration from the left with the Biden administration, with Biden and Harris, and she's playing footsie with them. It should be the easiest thing in the world for her to condemn them and to say they don't have a point. We are not interested in listening to their issues. We're not going to play both sides in here. Israel is our ally. It's going to remain our ally, and that's in America's interest.
Well,
in
that's
least,
only,
but
only,
she won't say that.
Right. And, Ben, there would only be every Republican would agree with you and John Fetterman. That's about it.
Yes.
And that's why Fetterman's staying away.
He's not here. He's not here. He has, he's back with his family. Ben. And man, more power to him.
Hey, Ben, thanks so much. Great. I always appreciate catching up with you.
Great to be with you.
And I'll keep in mind, he's the host of the Ben Domenech podcast, worth looking up. All right, when we come back, Rob Schneider joins us in studio, and then Rich Lowry a little bit later on. Big show. I'm so glad you're here.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We do not need four more years of bluster and bumbling and chaos. We have seen that movie before, and we all know that the sequel is usually worse. America's ready for a new chapter. America's ready for a better story. We are ready for a President Kamala Harris.
I know that.
I don't think so.
That Rob Schneider's here. Rob's got a book out.
That was pretty. I mean, talk about a sequel. How about a Kamala? Is it Kamala? Kamala Mala? I like that they were yelling at a woman, Nancy Mace, the other day because they're insisting that she say the name correctly. It's just like that's the kind of ugliness we're seeing from the Democrats. And if you don't want a sequel, I don't want a sequel for the Kamala Harris and or Kamala Harris. And another 4 years of work of the Democrats working with tech companies to silence those who disagree with them. Four more years of inflation, four more years of extending this horrible human carnage in Ukraine. We have to get out. And the only way to do that is to kick these people to the curb.
So Rob Schneider here. You didn't give me a chance to laud you and roll down your credits.
I thought they knew.
One of the funniest men in America, You Can Do It, is the name of his book that comes out in September.
Thank you.
And we can't wait for it. It's called Speak Your Mind, America, and he does. So, Rob, one thing that the Barack Obama does not let get in his way here, wonderfully delivered, but in terms of substance, if you ask America in almost every poll, did they prefer the Trump years to the Biden years, they picked Trump. That's what Trump is actually running on.
I know.
And they think that he's still in office. Last night, it was as if he was still there.
They can't let go. They can't let go. That's their buzzword. It really is. There is something to Trump that is kind of like a – when they say Trump derangement syndrome, it is really like a drug for some liberals. It makes their head explode. Usually it takes a Democrat and their IQ drops about 15 points. To where they just get the part of their brain that's more like more like an alligator, that part of your brain, the Abdullah Ablongata, and I think it does hurt their thinking.
So, do you remember the White House Correspondents' Dinner when Trump was there and Obama was president? Do you remember Jimmy Kimmel mean tweets when Obama read them out loud? And he read a mean tweet that Donald Trump, the host of The Apprentice, wrote to him. And he said, at least, Donald, I will be president. And everyone laughed.
Yeah.
And guess what? He became president. But Obama has not learned his lesson. The taunts continue. Listen to this. Cut four.
Since he rode down his golden escalator 9 years ago, it has been a constant stream of gripes and grievances. That's actually been getting worse now that he's afraid of losing to Kamala.
Even he said the name wrong.
There's the childish nicknames, the crazy conspiracy theories, this weird obsession with crowd sizes.
So he's taunting, they're laughing. Every time he does that, Trump gets stronger.
I know. I think you guys said it was 143 mentions. I will say that there's never been a president who has crapped on another president like that. You know, I don't think it's not like, you know, Trump didn't outside of an election, some guy who's not running crapping on another. There's so many new things that the Democrats are putting into this election and the last 4 years. I mean, it's interesting at the convention. I think the Democrats are trying to widen their base. They're going after the ancient Aztec vote by having human baby sacrifices outside the convention. I mean, that's absolutely.
Oh, you're talking about abortion clinics, pop-up clinics, a free vasectomy,
outside,
free abortion outside.
Yeah, that's just.
Which, by the way, a lot of Democrats are. What the hell is that?
That's horrendous. I mean, they can't. You can run on a woman's right to choose, but you can't run on the idea of abortion.
Like it's a great thing.
Yeah, like it's like this is the best. You know, I do have a problem with somebody who puts it in the category of women's health. You could say it's women's reproductive choice, but you can't say it's women's health. You know, I won't say his name, but he was a PD. He's an obstetrician. Obstetrician's early for me, and he said he delivered 40,000 babies in his career. There was not one time to have to lose a baby over the health of a woman. So that's one of those things that is just.
Well, they were marching. They were marching women out there who said they had a similar experience and had to go out there. So, I mean, we're at a spot that I never thought in our country. So I did this job for 20 plus years. And the one thing people would say is, Brian, no reason to bring up abortion. It's just a very divisive thing. Roe v. Wade is. So it's you're not really going to bring it up. Now it's nonstop.
I know.
They're actually doing the 4 days is all about abortion.
I know. It's just sad because it really should be. And I do think the legal rare and safe. It was the right call, and because the problem is it's never going to stop. Even if you did, you know, and America is not for this outlawing it. If you did, then it would just be happening someplace, and then the mother would die as well. So it is a horrendous decision. It is very personal, and I don't think you should run a platform for or against it. It's just a terrible thing. Unfortunately. You know, if you look into the real history of Planned Parenthood, it's an ugly history. There's no, I mean, you really.
Now they're doing the trans care in Planned Parenthood.
Well, that's, I don't know enough about that. But I will say that the idea of this, America is behind what's happening in Europe because of the CAS report has said that this is just, it is not the way to treat teenagers who are confused. And a lot of them are. Autistic. So I think it's horrible, and it's young women that are being it's butchered, and it's child mutilation, and to give repurposed castration drugs to children should be a crime.
See, I don't even at this point. You are 100% right, and I don't think. Well, I want Kamala Harris to be asked about that.
Yeah,
her to be asked about anything.
Well,
anything of substance.
It works to not have to answer any questions, and that's the real. There's a thing in when you're playing poker, when somebody gives a tell, you kind of get. You know, when the cards turn over, the fourth card, and they're just staring at it, that means they have nothing. That's a tell, and the real tell that Kamala Harris has nothing is she won't take questions.
You can't see it at home. I'll show it to the Fox Nation people. The book's coming out. It's called You Can Do It by Rob Schneider, Speak Your Mind, America. And it comes out in September.
September 24th. It's 20, about free speech.
Are you coming
really
back?
I'm coming back.
Of course. With or without a hat. He's equally impressive and very handsome. Rob, thanks so much.
You too, brother.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
One of the best convention speeches I've ever seen by anybody in any circumstance.
Before President Barack Obama spoke tonight, Michelle Obama gave one of the most rousing and effective convention speeches you may ever hear. President Barack Obama, he's a pretty good speaker, very good speaker. He's rarely had to follow a tougher act than that.
President Obama is unmistakably extraordinary, as you said, an orator. There's no Republican who would say anything different.
There you go. We are back, and that is a review of day two at the Democratic Convention. We're now into day three, and tonight we'll feature Bill Clinton and Tim Walz Good luck with that. Why Bill Clinton is still a featured speaker when he's been so sullied since he left. And, of course, you got the Jeffrey Epstein revelations. It's destroyed some people and not others. And meanwhile, he's been on the plane more than anybody else. But he's going to be the day three speaker. It kind of makes sense. Give some distance between Kamala Harris and Barack Obama. But keep in mind, too, you got to keep differences now, if you could follow this, between Obama, Biden, and Harris. Harris is being boosted by both men who now have a rift that might be irreparable. Rich Lowry is part of knows all about the soap opera. He's at a National Review. Also knows all about elections. Rich, welcome back. How do you rate the Obama's performance last night?
It was good. You know, they're effective at this, no doubt. And just made Joe Biden feel even more of a bit player in this drama, not of his making. You know, he was pushed off to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with a really kind of pathetic performance, but the best he can muster. And then you have these two incredibly compelling performers who still have a hold on the party. I didn't like, of course, the substance of Michelle's speech, especially the way she attributed so much of the opposition to them to a hostility based on race and gender, which I think is wrong and a smear. But it was a rousing speech, and Barack Obama is just a natural. So, you know, I'm not going to determine the election, but it was a good night for them.
Couple of things. I was surprised. Number one, Michelle Obama still seems angry. They're well delivered. She definitely is not intimidated by the spotlight. That's why people wanted her to run. But I think President Obama has a much more positive view of the president of the country than she does. Here's an example. Cut eight.
For years, Donald Trump did everything in his power to try to make people fear us. See, his limited, narrow view of the world made him feel threatened by the existence of two hardworking, highly educated, successful people who happen to be black. I want to know, who's going to tell him that the job he's currently seeking might just be one of those black jobs?
It's a good line, but the sentiment is ridiculous. I mean, she basically just called him a raging racist.
Yeah, it was a great, the black jobs thing. That you got to give them credit where it's due. That is a great line. But was Trump opposed to Joe Biden because he's an old white man? Is that why he's been so harsh about Joe Biden? Right?
Yeah.
Other Republicans that were desperately opposed to the Obamas, were they all racist and misogynist too? It's absurd. It's a complete smear. Look, Trump will use any card he thinks that's going to work against any opponent, right? Ask Ted Cruz, right? Ted Cruz is not a black man. So that's crazy.
And by the way, he accused Ted Cruz of being born in Canada.
Yeah, yeah. And his father being part of the JFK assassination, whatever he can find, whatever kidney pinch that he needs at any given moment, he's going to use, you know, but that doesn't make him a racist.
So where does this put this election so far with day two done? I mean, I'm just going to assume, I'll tell you right now, Clinton will be fine. Tim Walz would be energetic and everyone would say what a great guy he is. And then Kamala Harris will have a fine speech. You can deliver a speech. There's really no more. The intangibles left on Monday
happen,
night.
Right?
Yeah, that it. So then here we are Friday, Rich Lowry. Where are we going to be at this election? 75 days left.
You know, she'll be ahead nationally by some amount. And we'll have to see if that comes down, how much it comes down. And then it's going to be a barn burner and a real narrow fight, you know, and she needs to be ahead by, you know, 2, 3, 4 points nationally to win the swing state she needs. So even if she's ahead by, you know, 3 or something, it's basically still a tied race. And there's plenty of material to work with for Trump and Vance, plenty. And they just need to make the most of it.
You just let's say that all we get is this mishmash of an economic plan, which is heavily ridiculed. They need something else. So they got to make a decision. Oh, you tell me. You're the expert. They got to make a decision. Are they going to run on Kamala Harris up to 2020, which she said? No problem. Are they going to run on 3.5 years and use the Joe Biden? You've been part of the Biden administration. You've been in a part of every big decision. So run on it. So, like, what do you do?
I think you do both. One, you got to argue that she's not the fresh new force. The best thing she has going for her, she's not Trump and she's not Biden. She's saying this yesterday, right? We need something new, a fresh start. Now, Trump's rejoined her. He had a really good line the other day. Don't quote me on the actual number, but she said something like, you know, she keeps on talking about day one. Day one for her was 756 days ago, right? Yeah. But making the point, she's the past. She's a status quo you don't like. And then, yeah, make the case she's a radical, and then make the case on top of that she's a phony. You know, these things can – they're not mutually exclusive, and expose her. I just think she's wafer thin. She's a manufactured candidate. She's a cardboard cutout. She couldn't have won, I don't believe, could have won the Democratic primary. She would have been exposed, and they're just counting on being able to protect her for 75 days, and it's the Trump campaign's job to rip off the facade.
And I think the biggest surprise for them was that she got the nomination. I think when they write the story of this and the takedown of Joe Biden, I think that the biggest surprise to Obama, as well as Nancy Pelosi, is that she worked the phones to get those 500 delegates, mm-hmm. and that Joe Biden's endorsement meant so much. So there was no chance for Scott Shapiro, Governor Beshear, yeah. Governor Newsom to get involved at all. Yeah. She just consolidated before they knew it. And next thing you know, they said, do we have to pretend as if we didn't say all those things about her, that she didn't have 32% approval rating just 1 year ago? Do we have to pretend this? And the answer is yes.
Yes, and they've been doing it quite effectively. It is a pretend game. There's nothing there. You know, Obama is so talented. There are things he believes. There are arguments he's been making for years. That whole thing at the end of the speech about why we're really divided, I think it's BS, but he believes it. And he can express it in his own words, his own thoughts. There's nothing like that, no sense like that from Kamala Harris. You know, Trump in 16 overturned his party's establishment, had these signature issues, a whole new way of thinking about politics and doing politics. There's none of that with Kamala. Bill Clinton, you know, was a nothing governor, I shouldn't say that, you know, Arkansas is a real state. We have the Huckabees who are impressive. But, you know, relative obscurity, a lot of people discounted him. And just through sheer talent and shamelessness and verbal acuity, you know, takes his party's nomination. It was handed to her on a platter, and they all have to pretend that she's this giant. And can they get away with it? Yeah, you know, they might. Mm-hmm. But it's there's a lot to work with to expose it.
Well, I tell you what. They have plenty of money, $400 million on the Trump side. They should be able to do it. They got some talented people cutting ads. They should be able to do it. They have other Democratic senators like Dave McCormick with a good team that's already done a great job putting together some of her past statements. Even Harold Ford, who's a Democrat, one of the greatest guys you'll meet, by the way, and said this last night, cut 24.
Kamala Harris and her team are going to have to talk about their economic plan. They're going to have to give us some reasons as to why, which I think she's right to do, change her position on some of these issues. I think as long as the American people know and are able to understand that her changes are not motivated by ambition, but are motivated by changed circumstances, changed facts, and wanting to do better for them with these changes, she will do fine.
Put it out there. Let's see it. And if her changes to Donald Trump's policies, you want to be strong on the border? Prove that you mean that. Mm-hmm. Do you want to crack down on illegal immigration? Do you want to take away the sanctuary city status of these places? Do you want to do mass deportations? What do you want to do in terms of inflation? How do you plan on attacking it? So she's got to be able to explain it.
But why does she need to explain it, right? What's the venue where she's going to be forced to explain it? If she does no interviews and just does very brief pull sides outside the plane, what's the venue besides the debate? That's why I think the debate is so important. That's where Trump can expose her and create some narratives that are negative that the press can't ignore. But otherwise, I think, Brian, they're just going to try to do what they're doing, just to have her read the teleprompter and ignore all this.
I think at some point, even mainstream press will be like, when are they doing interviews? As I did some last night, the last week, and you see the New York Times and you see CNN saying, I don't understand. You have time to do an interview. You have time in between stops. There's nothing on the schedule today. Why can't you do an interview? So I find it hard to believe that her website is still blank.
I mean, it's a perfect metaphor. She's a blank slate upon which all the stuff is being written. You know, she's brat, she's joyful, and all this. It's totally manufactured. You know, politics, there's always an artificiality to it, but this is off the charts.
Here's what Governor Gavin Newsom said about that. Cut 27.
Plan. We haven't seen the details of it yet. She hasn't put out the details. And so when I have an opportunity to review those details, it's along the lines of what Elizabeth Warren's done. I think it is meritorious and interesting. I've been pursuing price gouging in California as it relates to oil companies, as it relates to big pharma. So I appreciate it more directionally, but I haven't had the opportunity to review the details.
So was asked about her economic plan. He was on the floor last night. So it's hard to defend something you don't know hasn't been released yet.
Yeah, so his argument when Peter was asking the question about details, like, conventions don't have details. Well, that's true, but usually websites have some details, right? And it's just because Elizabeth Warren, again, I don't like her. Bernie Sanders, I don't like her. But these are people of substance, have true convictions. And they'd be embarrassed not to have the details. If there weren't details, they'd be desperate to get them out, right? Because they believe in policy. And just I don't think any of those things are true of Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I mean, you write in your column that she's no investor, and you expand on what we do know so far. Do you want to tell our audience about this?
Yeah, well, she was asked the other day, right, in one of these pull sides for 3 minutes, how are you going to pay for your program? And she repeated the phrase return on investment 5 or 6 times. Clear, someone, an advisor had mentioned this phrase. It stuck in her head. Not clear actually, you know, how deeply she understands it. But the idea that government spending just pays for itself is absurd. There's some government spending that's worth it, yes. But the idea that it all has magical returns is just a way to evade the choices government should have to make. But this has kind of been central to the Democratic program for a very long time. And it just kind of reaches a new level of absurdity with her.
They say that she's going to have a windfall profit tax, perhaps. So if you have a good year in your stock market, you're going to pay a tax. If you have a bad year, do you get money back? I mean, are they really going to try that? She evidently has people talking about a wealth tax. Are we really doing this?
Yeah, I think all that would be idiotic. But if they've endorsed price controls, obviously some sort of the brake doesn't exist on bad ideas. So to propose a wealth tax, why would she need to do that? I don't understand why she feels the need to go to Biden's left on economics, but she does.
Right. In the one speech, someone wrote it. Now, when she said what she said, when she said was asked, like you said, about some of these spending, who's going to pay for it? She says, when you are strengthening neighborhoods, strengthening communities, and in particular the economy of the communities, and investing in a broad-based economy, everybody benefits and it pays for itself in that way, which means I didn't study. I'm going to try to ad-lib my way through my oral presentation. So being that she is trying to make people just stay under the radar and get to Election Day, why would you come up with something that's going to cause so much controversy where even the Washington Post and the Hill call you out?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the economic speech was a mistake, and again on her return on investment thing. If you ask Bill Clinton how he's going to pay for his program on a tarmac somewhere, he'd talk for 10 minutes, right? And reporters would be finally stop, go away. We get it, fine, because he's so absorbed by the details and masters them and wants to convince you, and she just doesn't have that capability.
Rich, it's going to be an interesting time and all unprecedented. Even with all your years of experience, everything's unprecedented, and the real race doesn't start 75 days until Election Day, till tomorrow, and early voting starts in 2 weeks. Rich Lowry, National Review. Thanks so much, Rich.
Thanks, Brian. Talk to you.
All right, we come back. I get your take in. Hey, listen, we're in day two. Obama spoke yesterday. That's their Aaron Judge. That's their Juan Soto. They just swung for the fences on day two, and it's a 4-game series. And I think they do want a degree of separation between Harris and Obama. They don't want that comparison. I do not blame them at all. But we'll talk about something else below the surface in just a moment. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. Brian Kilmeade. breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm not the target audience here, but when you have Barack Obama, the former Democratic president of the United States, sitting there and making his big speech, and Kamala Harris is 90 miles away, I think it suggests that their party's not especially unified. Of course, we know that Barack Obama is one of the people who really forced Joe Biden out of the race to begin with. So I think that the conflict is actually buried beneath the surface, but is there for all to see.
That, of course, J.D. Vance, he was on with us on Fox and Friends 1 hour ago, and what he's building up to this. And I think it's of interest because you want to know how together the party is and how dedicated they would be to fighting for Kamala Harris, who was considered really a joke of a vice president. Now we're supposed to think that she is this fantastic candidate, this transformational leader, and she's never been. So what he's saying is that Joe Biden gives his speech at 10:30 at night, 11:30 at night, and then leaves, goes to another state 2,000 miles away. Barack Obama comes the next night, praises him, but they're not speaking. And the word is irreparable between the two, because he knows he was behind it. He knows they met at George Clooney's big fundraiser, and he got stabbed in the back right after. And Jill is probably in his ear saying that he's the one. And then you have Michelle Obama not even mention the Biden's name, or Joe Biden doing such a great job, or Jill Biden being my good friend. And instead, evidently, there's a huge rift, and it's got to be true, that she's friends with Bo Biden's widow, and they kick Bo Biden's widow to the curb. They don't even acknowledge her. Told you, they're a bad family. Don't let anyone tell you different. So that's going on. At the same time, Nancy Pelosi, who did the stabbing in the back, she is not even speaking to the Bidens. She is a part of this, but she's never been a fan of Kamala Harris. Remember, she was on with Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper said twice, he goes, do you think she'll be a good running mate for Joe Biden? And she came back and says, he thinks so. I mean, that's as bad as Joe Biden should decide soon whether he's running for re-election after he said 25 times, only God Almighty could stop me from running for re-election. They should have added, and Nancy Pelosi. So they stopped it. So there's real tension there. So Ben Domenech just said something interesting. He says, on the floor, there's people uneasy. They're happy to see the Obamas and the rock stars. You know, you go watch the Eagles play, the Philadelphia Eagles with the rock band, and you're happy, right? You're happy. That's your team. And you're happy to see them. But do you really believe this ticket's going to win? And all I can say, if I'm the Trump team, I use this whole thing as a strategy session. Reminds me of Family Feud. When the other family's going, you huddle on the other side. So you know when they fail, unless they run the table, and they won't, they're sooner or later they'll have to do a debate or interview, you are ready to go. And they are such pros on the Trump side, you're going to have to really beat them. And they have to change. They'll put $200 million into beating Joe Biden, and he left. So that'll screw up anybody. But I think they're ready now.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. I'm glad I'm here at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. This hour, I'm going to be joined by Steph Knight, a matter of moments, from Axios. She's down in the fray in Chicago, inside the fencing. We're now three layers deep. Thousands on the outside. It has not been as disruptive as they thought, but they're definitely there, and they're definitely anti-Israel, and they're definitely pro-Palestinian, and there's even pro-Hamas. I'm wondering what the message is for the Democratic Party. For me, it would be very simple. These are my allies. This is what happened October 7th. We got their back. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Over the coming days, we are going to do everything possible to, one, get Hamas on board with the bridging proposal, and then to make sure that both parties work on and agree to necessary details of implementation.
That Secretary of State Anthony Blinken trying to put a positive spin on it. He's trying to get some type of ceasefire. Peace deal not close in Gaza. We'll describe what's going to happen, but guess what? Iran might be closer to attacking Israel. I'll explain.
Number two.
But you look at radical liberal Kamala Harris. She's been the ringleader for this anti-crime and the anti-police crusade. It's a real anti-police crusade.
Trump not going dark. In fact, he is on the stump and upbeat as we get set for an all-out sprint over the next 75 days. And he waits any type of policy to debate, to challenge, an agenda to go up against, anything from Kamala of substance besides some bullet statements on the economy. We'll see if that changes after the DNC.
Number one.
We do not need four more years of bluster and bumbling and chaos. We have seen that movie before, and we all know that the sequel is usually worse.
We'll see about that, because most people think the Trump years were better than the Biden years. You know, your ex-friend, DNC Day 2, belonged to the Obamas. Their message, let's go for change. Let's not go back to Trump. Do they realize that Trump has been gone and the Dems have been in power 12 of the last 16 years? We review and preview right now at the DNC as we get with Day 3, which will feature Tim Walz, the vice presidential nominee, as well as Bill Clinton. Steph Knight joins us now of Axios. Steph, welcome back. How would you gauge the first 2 days?
Look, I mean, there's no question that Democrats are very excited about the top of the ticket these days. And, you know, there has been a lot of energy that you can tell and see in the room, even going down to, you know, the actual roll call itself, which Democrats decided to make almost kind of a party scene with, you know, a DJ and loud music and dancing. It's clear people are excited and having a good time on the floor. This is to be expected from a convention. It is not unusual for these things to be kind of a rallying moment for either party. And, you know, especially coming after a few weeks of excitement throughout the Democratic Party, just because of Kamala Harris taking the top of the ticket. And of course, last night really was all about the Obamas. And you really got this sense that they are trying to remake the magic of 2008. We really saw, you know, former President Obama and Michelle Obama go after Trump in ways that we don't often see. The gloves really came off. And it seems to be not just a political thing for them, but also a personal thing. And so that was kind of remarkable to watch, to see them really go after Donald Trump as aggressively as they did.
Here's an example, cut three.
And as we gather here tonight, the people who will decide this election are asking a very simple question. Who will fight for me? Who's thinking about my future, about my children's future, about our future together? One thing is for certain, Donald Trump is not losing sleep over that question.
Yeah, they want to, one of the things that you hear, they want to paint him as somebody in it for himself. Donald Trump's in it for himself. Will that fly?
I mean, we'll have to see. There's no question that Trump is a controversial character. And we saw that there, you know, in 2020, concerns about Trump can lead to Democratic successes. And so I think that's part of what we're seeing here. People who love Trump love him no matter what, are never going to back down. And then there are people who are the never Trumpers. There are people who are concerned about his personality, who maybe support his policies, but don't love the way he presents himself, the way he posts on Truth Social, the way he talks at his rallies. And so, you know, you're seeing Democrats try to find those people and try to persuade them to vote for Democrats instead. But, you know, you talked about this at the top as well. The question is going to come down to, under whose administration did people feel like their lives were better? And that has been a question that polls have shown people tend to say under former President Trump. However, because of the new ticket, because Joe Biden will no longer be at the top of the ticket, that does create an opening for Democrats, and we're seeing them try to make a play for that.
Yeah, we'll see. So Jackie Heinrich reporting that the plan yesterday came together for Joe Biden was going to go on vacation after he did his speech, and the Obamas were going to speak on day two, but they wanted to keep Kamala Harris out for optic reasons. It's still showing that Biden, many people believe that the President Obama had a lot to do with the fact that Biden was kicked to the curb like he was, and he views him as responsible for driving the end of his reelection. And the very convention was supposed to be only weeks away. He said, it's a tricky situation. So they thought, let's have Kamala Harris 90 miles away in Milwaukee. Do you think that played into it?
I mean, Look, yeah, it was certainly an interesting decision to have her at a rally in Milwaukee while, you know, Biden is passing the baton, having that moment. And it's clear there's been lots of reporting that Biden has been frustrated by how this has all went down. And even just hearing his comments to the press recently, he's clearly trying to take ownership of his decision. He's trying to say that, no, it was no one's pushing him. He kind of discounted Nancy Pelosi's role, though he said he hasn't spoken to her. I mean, this has been, you know, it's been a messy few weeks for the Democratic Party. They're clearly trying to cover up some of that awkwardness and move on and move forward. And kind of they gave Biden his moment early on, but it was, you know, the day of the convention that is typically the least watched. And it was also a late night, ended up being a very late night speech, kind of past the time that he usually is best when he's awake and alert, something we've been reporting at Axios for a while now. And so it certainly is a decision and a choice, and it is very clear that the Democratic Party is trying to leave Joe Biden behind and aggressively move forward with Kamala Harris.
So we'll see what's going to happen. At one point, don't you think she's got to sit down with Steph, you, or someone here at Fox and do it, or someone at CNN or MSNBC or anywhere, Washington Post, and do an interview and say, this is my economic plan, and I'll justify my changes on immigration. I'll justify my view on foreign policy. I'll clarify that I was in the room with Afghanistan on withdrawal. I mean, she's got to be able to answer her, you know, how she feels about issues, because we either judge her on the 3.5 years when she's in office, or judge her on what she did up until 2020. She's went, and then just to flip without talking to people, I would think it's unacceptable to journalists at large and the American voter.
I mean, absolutely. I believe she does need to sit down with the media. Axios has submitted requests. Others have as well. You know, there's no question that every major news outlet has a request in with her team trying to get a sit down with her to clarify. And it is pretty remarkable that Harris will, you know, on Thursday accept the presidential nomination for the Democratic Party without having sat for an interview, without holding a press conference, or even releasing many details about what her policy priorities are. You know, looking at the campaign website, they don't even have a detailed policy page to lay out where she stands on things. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but she is on the record from several years ago during the 2020 cycle saying things like she supports fracking bans and she wants to decriminalize border crossings. And now her campaign is on background saying that she no longer stands for those things. And those are significant policy changes. And it is owed, I believe, to the American people for her to explain clearly where she actually stands on those issues. And if she's changed her mind, why she's changed her mind. And otherwise, it does give Republicans an opportunity to just use the clips that they have of her saying that she supports these issues that could be controversial for some parts of the electorate. And, you know, we've seen the pressure on her growing to have these sit-down interviews. I think that will only continue, especially after the DNC. But, you know, it's clear that she is taking a very measured, cautious approach. And Axios has reported that this is an approach that she has long had. She's known for being risk averse, for being very choreographed. She tends to do scripted appearances versus off the cuff, even as vice president. But that's something that's not really going to fly long term when you're in the heat of a presidential election cycle.
So a couple of things as we get to know Tim Walz, we know that his 24 years in the military has got to be respected, but overstating what he did has got to be examined. And weapons of war, when he was not in war, he was in Italy, saying that I retired before I knew my unit was going to be deployed. The person that replaced him said that is not true. And then finding out what his rank was is also something that's going to be brought up. Yesterday, they had to walk back that he said his wife had IVF treatments to have her two kids. I'm not sure that's a big deal, but they had to walk it back. Evidently, it was an IUI. He was criticized for misstating, of course, for his military rank. He also had a little bit of a problem defining what happened with his 1995 DUI arrest. You get arrested DUI, do what George Bush did, made a huge mistake. But instead, he said it was a misunderstanding, that he actually drove his car to the police station. When he wasn't, he was put in the back of a car and he was arrested, and they even have his blood alcohol level is too high. So are these things a big deal?
I mean, look, any one of those things maybe is not a big deal, but it is creating this pattern. And it's the kind of thing that starts to make people question who this person is that Kamala Harris chose as her running mate. You know, I think some of these can be explained, but, you know, when you're explaining, you're losing. And this is going to be an issue. And, you know, I have a good colleague who has covered him for a long time in Minnesota who knows that he kind of is a gaffe factory. This is something that is known about him, that he tends to misspeak or overly elaborate on things. And at the very least, it creates vulnerabilities for Republicans to attack him and taint his image. Someone who has so far been received with a lot of positivity in the Democratic Party at the very least. He is viewed as a likable guy by a lot of people and independent moderate voters. And so anytime you have these moments, these questions that come up, it just starts to chip away at that image. And so, you know, whether it's not clear right now whether this is going to be, you know, a huge issue that really harms the campaign. But again, the trend is there, and it's not a trend that's going to be helpful for the ticket.
So a couple of things. What do you expect tonight from Bill Clinton? I mean, it's clearly not the guy in his prime that saved Barack Obama in 2012. So why is he getting day three prime time status? And do you think it's necessary in retrospect to say, is it part of separating Kamala Harris from Obama because Obamas are such strong speakers?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've seen them really lean in on, you know, the former president and the way the party's united. And that's a huge part of this, right? It's a show of unity. And it's a comparison to the RNC where we didn't hear from any of the former presidents on stage and on the behalf of Trump. It's showing that there is a tradition, that there is respect across the Democratic Party. And so that's the message they're trying to send here by including, obviously, former President Clinton on stage. And, of course, he is a former president going to receive a primetime slot. But there is something, too, kind of distancing Kamala Harris from the Obamas, giving some space because they are such well-known, popular speakers who, you know, are very comfortable on the stage and tend to really move people. Maybe this is a little bit softening that excitement and allowing Harris to really have her moment on Thursday.
Steph Kite, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Stay safe in there. I know you got some protests on the outside. Have those protests been a big force? Has that been a big presence, a big source of conversation?
I've certainly heard from my colleagues that there have been some protests. They've been, you know, pretty much kept at bay, and people have been able to, you know, go about their work without it being too big of an obstacle. But there are certainly people there protesting as expected.
All right, go get them, Steph. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
1-866-408-7669. We'll go back to your calls, and just actually for the first time, we'll get to your calls. Anywhere you can write me, BrianKilmeade.com. If you had to go back to work, don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
There's one thing that Obama said, though, the president. He said, we don't need four more years of bumbling and chaos. Now, he was talking about President Trump, but I imagine that President Trump was somewhere saying, that's exactly what I've been saying.
Yeah.
He's talking about the last 4 years, and if you look at what people are saying about how they feel about the direction of the country, the state of their finances, the debt that they feel, the inflation, all of those things, they want a change from that.
So interesting. Dana Perino, absolutely. While praising in the beginning of that sound, but I cut it off on purpose. It was just too long. She was saying, what a great speech, but about the content, why are you blaming Donald Trump for 2020? It's 2024. We don't need any more bumbling. You got to be kidding me. This is this 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is where bumbling lives. I mean, it's unbelievable between Afghanistan, between this economy, being inflation's transitory. Well, look what's going on with the two-state solution with the Palestinians. I'm off that train. I'm on the train. I'm getting weapons to Ukraine. I'm not getting weapons to Ukraine. Well, I have an infrastructure deal, but only with not one rural community has been hooked up with the internet, and only 8 power stations have been built. Bumbling? Tom, you're in Colorado. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
Good.
Hey, that was my sentiment exactly. Like, who's been running this country for 12 of the last 16 years? The Democrats?
Let's compare it. Ask the American people what they want.
Yeah, it's like the only reprieve we've had was the 4 years of Trump. And then they talk about all this bumbling. Well, that's exactly what we've had. And you know, I listen to these speeches and these people are like, it's all just propaganda. It's all just like, let's play on the heart souls of these people that don't really do any research. They are just working on the sentiments of pretty much the ignorant. And it just frustrates me to no end.
Yeah, we'll see. I think, don't you think, Tom, the average American cannot vote for Kamala Harris right now? They actually know nothing about her. And they don't know who she is. They don't know. Should we judge it by Joe Biden's record? Should we judge it by the flamed out candidate? Should we judge it by the non-accomplished senator, the most liberal senator to the left of Bernie Sanders in 2019? Please tell me how we're supposed to judge her. Because right now, I think the average voter, blue collar, white collar, 18, 88, I don't know what she stands for.
No, I just kind of think if she gets elected, the same people are going to be running the country that are running it now, because it's certainly not Joe Biden. So whoever is pulling the strings, whoever the puppet master is, which might be Obama, it might be just a collaboration of people, but those are the same people that are going to be running the country, and Kamala's going to be running around in Air Force One and giggling like an idiot and just being a figurehead.
I mean, there are people like Trump, like him or not, that really want to put their fingerprints on the 4 years. I think Kamala Harris would be perfectly happy to be Queen of England. Where you fly around, you represent the country, and let everybody else do all the work. Because there is no overriding image. It's all about accomplishment, getting to a certain level. But it's not about leading. Where has she shown leadership? I'm waiting.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Tonight, like Dana said, I agree with this. Tonight, in the next few days, this is our convention. If Republicans had theirs and they were able to promote President Trump, we'll do this with Vice President Harris. And we've done it effectively so far. But there's no doubt the hard part will come, as Cedric Richmond said with you yesterday, the former congressman and senior advisor to the campaign. This is the beginning of a very hard campaign. We're blessed and fortunate as Democrats to be back even, but we shouldn't kid ourselves. This is going to be a very tough campaign over the next 75, 80 days.
It's going to be tough, and it's going to be close. And this is as high, I believe, as Kamala Harris will be, because it'll be Thursday. It will probably be a culmination. I expect the speech to be fine. I think it'll talk about how bad Donald Trump is. Clearly, they do not feel as though that they can run without vilifying the other guy. Now, I know that's part of politics. I was surprised to see how many mentions Donald Trump got through the Obamas. So we'll see how this goes. It was brought up by Scott Jennings on CNN. He's the lone Republican there, that even though the speeches were impressively delivered, you got to recognize talent when you see it, and also good speech writing. But the content is really noteworthy. Listen, cut 12.
But we're seeing the contrast of the politics of combat versus the politics of compassion. That's what the Obamas were trying to set up tonight, in my judgment. I should warn my fellow Republicans that we heard two of the greatest political communicators in the country tonight. Now, we had Hulkamania.
Yeah.
The Democrats have Obamamania. They ripped the roof off of this place tonight. These Democrats are fired up. They're not playing, okay? Yes, they say things that are exaggerations. They do say things about Trump and the Republicans that are outright lies. But the convention is working for Harris, at least as of today.
Interesting. That is true. You got to salute it. Just David Axelrod did the same thing. You know, he walked around and Van Jones said, man, they knocked it out of the park. So that was a month ago. It seems like a lifetime ago. But he also went on to expand on what was in this speech and what they're not saying. And it wasn't a lot of praise for Kamala Harris. It really wasn't. Cut 13.
The gap that I still see in all these speeches, as good as they were, is that she's in the White House right now. Democrats have controlled the White House for 12 of the last 16 years. And for all of the talk about division and the problems in the country and people are hurting, Democrats have mostly controlled this country. Trump had it for four. The Obamas and Biden had it for the rest of the time. And somehow, it's still all Trump's fault, and somehow she hasn't been at the center of it. So to me, that's still the glaring hole in this campaign that hasn't yet been solved at the convention. How do you explain all of the problems that will be solved by the person who is currently in there for the last 3.5 years, who is supposed to already be working on solving it.
Exactly. I don't want to trip you up, but you are in charge. When I get in there on day one, I'm attacking inflation. No, it's day 1100. Really? It's 1100. What are you doing? Now, if her follow-up is I had these 4 or 5 ideas and Joe Biden wouldn't let me see him. He was left out of the Oval Office. I couldn't get to him. I went up to him at church. He still wouldn't hear me. He wouldn't see me. That's a different story. So who else spoke last night? Bernie Sanders. Now, I believe that Kamala Harris, the reason why the squad and Bernie Sanders were like one of the last ones to hold on to Joe Biden is because they thought Joe Biden is as left as it gets. Kamala Harris would even be further left. And they were all there speaking, AOC on Monday. And then Bernie Sanders, I didn't even pull any cuts because I just don't want to hear him. I know exactly what he's going to say. But Bernie Sanders had a prominent spot too last night and got a good reaction, but it does the same speech all the time. But it makes you wonder where the party's at. Not where the party's at, but where the Democratic Party's at. But I do, on some other level, always wear none to where the party's at, which I believe is a song. Cut 16, Karl Rove.
I was taken by Bernie Sanders' speech because during that speech, it showed how different these two parties are that we have in America. He went out of, you know, the ending of the speech was all the nostrums, you know, Green New Deal, Medicare for all, and so forth. But he started off by talking about the things that he thought Joe Biden had done right, which were started. The first one was the American Rescue Plan, nearly $2 trillion of additional spending. And then he marched his way through all of the additional spending that even Obama's Treasury Secretary Larry Summers said, you pass this stuff and it's going to cause a burst of inflation. And it did. And Bernie Sanders was complimenting the American Rescue Plan, the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, the increases in domestic spending. All of these things he was heralding as great achievements of the Democratic Party.
So think about this. Bernie Sanders says great achievements. Average American hurt us big time. Average deficit rocketed forward. And as you mentioned, Larry Summers used to run Harvard, used to be Treasury Secretary under Clinton, said it was a huge mistake. Both Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders said Kamala Harris was there, progressed to the fighting vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, the rescue plan, almost everything she had the deciding vote on. And Karl Rove points out that just in case they try to spin it out and say that was Joe Biden's plan, I was working on something else, you have Joe Biden saying she was there, and you have her saying that she was there, the last person to leave after the decision to leave Afghanistan. And then you have, pointing out by Bernie Sanders, she was there every step of the way on all these spending programs, which is an albatross hanging over her net, over her neck, big time. That's what it turned into. Also, her comments about sanctuary cities, doing everything A to Z for illegal immigrants, that's not going to fly in the black community, especially, or anybody in the inner city community say, my program's being cut, my gym time has been lessened so people can make it a shelter. For what? Illegal immigrants who are getting my taxpayer dollars? Because you say you have a big heart? I think you have a terrible policy. Big time. So Trump was out yesterday. He's a little monotone. But when he was asked about the Obamas, this was prior to the speech. Now, I've played in the past how bad, and you just heard it, how bad the Obamas were to Trump last night. Expected. I'd expect this over the top on Trump. But listen to it, Donald Trump talk about the Obamas. Cut 17.
I like him. I think he's a nice gentleman, but he was very, very weak on trade. If you take a look at what happened to our country trade-wise, it was a disaster. Take a look at Japan, take a look at China, take a look at what happened with some of these countries, what they did. But I happen to like him. I respect him, and I respect his wife.
So that was before the speeches. Sooner or later, he'll amend that because they went after him personally. They didn't say, Obama, that Trump did this and Trump did that, included with Russia, and talked about substance. They just talked about what a bad guy he is, how he complains all the time. Let me just say something, Mr. Obama. If you were indicted 4 times for things, now, one of those times you might not like January 6th and you thought it was important for an overmatched prosecutor in Atlanta to charge the president on that. But go ahead. But when you look at these other cases and you think that you've been indicted 4 times, if you're staring at prison, if you had to sit in court for 6 weeks instead of campaigning or running your business, if they told you you have 1 week to come up with $150 million or so, liquidating all your assets. If you have someone like E. Jean Carroll come out and said something happened sometime a long time ago, I don't know exactly the year, that I want to sue you for, and then sues him and he loses to a New York jury. If you get sued twice civilly, if you get indicted four times criminally, and you think they're all trumped up, and almost all are, pure politics, you would be complaining too. The reason why you'd have much to complain about, you had a compliant press, you had two re-elections, you're very talented as a speaker, communicator, but you didn't have 8 great years as a president, in my view. I mean, I could go over foreign policy, but domestic policies, you got to be kidding me with Obamacare, even though the objective is great to try to improve health care access in this country, the instrument wasn't. And now people are afraid to bring it up because it is a third rail of politics. But if they were suing you when you got out of office or if you tried to run again four times, believe me, you would be complaining a lot too, especially because you did give interviews, unlike Joe Biden, who thought he'd go this whole time and not give interviews. So Kamala Harris was out yesterday in Milwaukee. She talks vaguely about what she'll do, enjoys the big crowds. It's noteworthy. Big crowd in Milwaukee, big one in Chicago. Cut 21.
And unlike Donald Trump, I will always put the middle class and working families first. But now we know he has a different plan, Trump, right? Just look at Project 2025. Now, if he is elected, understand what that, you know, by the way, can you believe they put that thing in writing, right? So that plan, though, tells us what they're up to.
Yeah, 2025. So if the Brookings Institute came out with a program, talked about Kamala Harris's platform without even mentioning her name, and if some people that work with Harris wrote it, do you think it would be right for Trump to say this Brookings Institute, known as a left-wing think tank, came up with this document and Kamala Harris will run on it? No. What are you playing on? Yeah, Trump said some things in the past. Oh, this Heritage Foundation, good guys, they're loyal. One of the most respected think tanks in Washington. Kevin Roberts is a friend of the show. Great guy. He wrote a 900-page document. Does anybody think that Donald Trump signed off on it? There might be some great things that he likes in there. It's great to speak to deep conservative thinkers and to liberal thinkers. You know, you saw everyone was lauding Joe Biden when he brought in John Meacham and other historians to talk about how they should approach this point in the economy coming out of a pandemic. They want to get a perspective on what it does in history. Now with Trump, he's got a think tank and conservative think tank. One of the weaknesses he had last time was he didn't know enough people in Washington to get those small jobs filled and get those other jobs filled with people that he was very familiar with. That won't be a problem now. So one thing Heritage did is when every time they did a seminar, did an event, they would say, hey guys, come to the job fair. If Trump is to win or a conservative gets the nomination and they win, do you want to work there? Here are the jobs available. I will interview you and screen you. So should a conservative win, here's the roster of people that we screened. You might want to do your own screening, but I think you'll find out that our screening was pretty good. I was at a few events. I was asked to speak at them. And sure enough, in between, they say, okay, job fair time. Who wants these jobs? Who's interested in the state? Who's interested here? Because they want to come in by the thousands. But it doesn't mean they want to go by a 900-page document, which is a lot of stuff to discuss. It's a think tank. Big difference. But just notice when it comes to 2025, Trump's got enough on the books. You don't have to make up a program and pretend he subscribed to it. So the problem is there's no specifics. And that's the one question people have. Where are the specifics? What will Kamala Harris govern? So Governor Gavin Newsom was on the floor and talked to Peter Ducey. Listen to this, cut 26.
So far, we've not heard a ton of specifics from Democrats about Vice President Harris's evolution on the issues over time. Isn't that a problem?
Shocked? Are you shocked that in a convention you're not hearing a lot of specifics?
It's been a month since she took over.
Come on. It's been one of the most remarkable transitions in modern American political history, and it's a transition that will evolve over the course of the next few months. She'll have plenty of time to sort of map out more nuance, more detail, and I think that will begin on Thursday night as she not only paints a picture, I think, very positively about the last 3.5 years in terms of where we were, what we had to do to get to where we are now, but more importantly, what we need to do to get this country moving again in the next 4 years and beginning to unify this country.
I think on every level, he hopes she fails. Number one, I couldn't tell you personally, but they had a big rivalry in California, friendly rivalry. Number two is if she wins, she's going to have control of the party for 4 years and try to get another four. And Gavin Newsom's going to be locked out. He'll be out of a governorship for 2 years by the time next 2 years roll around, by the time 2028 rolls around. And then what's he going to do? state senator. I guess he could be U.S. senator. But he thinks of himself as a president. He dresses the part. He looks the part. The problem is he can't do the part. But he'll think he can. So I think a lot of these people, on a lot of levels, like Whitmer and Gavin Newsom, they say, I don't want a part of this. There's too good a chance they're going to lose. I don't want to be part of a losing campaign. Don't include me in it. So you just watch. I think on some levels, the minute she loses, and I do think she's going to lose, you're going to see how happy those other guys are. And Whitmer and Newsom absolutely will be running in 2028. So when we come back, I'll take a few more of your calls, and we'll find out if there's more to know. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I was just thinking there seems to be more that we should know, and that's why Prevagen's so important. All right, let's talk flag football. Star quarterback Darryl Hooch-Duchette believes he's a better fit to lead Team USA in 2028 than Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, there is going to be flag football, men's flag football, I imagine women's too, in the 28 Olympics. Let's listen to Darryl talk to TMZ.
I love the fact that they want to play and that they want to come out and compete. But at the end of the day, we want the same process that we've been having to play. We have to try out, and so do they. I don't want to be like they're entitled because of their names to be able to just automatically be on the team. And that's what it sounds like from the flag football world. But I'm not necessarily speaking about myself being the quarterback or trying to compete against Patrick Mahomes or anything like that. I feel like I'm better than Patrick Mahomes because of my IQ of the game. I know he's right now the best in the league. I know he's more accurate. I know he has all these intangibles. But when it comes to flag football, I feel like I know more than him.
It could be. The field is shorter. It's more narrow. The competition is only 5-on-5. According to Hoosh, there's almost no physicality, and it takes a special skill set to know how to do it. I think it would be interesting to see the players actually try out. Next, Taylor Swift seemingly went out of her way to give two young victims of the Southport stabbing an enchanted evening, taking time away from her Eras tour to do that. The pop star and her mom, Andrea Swift, appeared to have a meet and greet with the young victims while in London for the 5 sold-out shows in Wembley. Both Taylor and her mom scooped the young girls up in hugs and posed for several photos, where one fan notably had a bandage on her arm with the singer's lyric, "You drew stars around my scars," close quote. The tragic stabbing, which led B.B. King, Alessi Dodd Stancombe, 7, Elisa De Silva Aguilar, 9, dead after a 17-year-old boy attacked their Taylor Swift-themed dance class at the end of July. 10 others, including 8 children, were also injured. Man, that's terrible. Next. All right. The famous fedora sported by Harrison Ford's in 1984 Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom fetched the swashbuckling sum of $630,000. There were 450 items of memorabilia, of entertainment memorabilia, but that's a lot of money. The fedora, quote, was specifically for the second installment of Indiana Jones series and matches film shots, production stills, and behind-the-scenes footage of Ford in the village set on location in Sri Lanka. So that's something I wouldn't pay for. I saw the first. I'd never seen the others.
Raiders was a really fun movie, I thought. The second one. This is from the second one. This one, of the original three, I always felt this one was boring in comparison.
I only like movies with Tom Hanks in them. Next. More women are skipping college to make 6 figures as electricians, car mechanics, and truck drivers. With the high price of tuition at 4-year colleges, America's owing nearly $2 trillion in student debt. Vocational school enrollment is up 16%. While the majority of workers in trades are men, a number of women growing big time. In 2020, only 11.6%. 11.6% of those completed their apprenticeship program. That's up significantly now. So would you feel good if you called for an electrician or a plumber and a woman showed up? Eric, what do you think?
I don't think there would be any difference between a woman or a man, right?
Now, you think differently, Pete. You would rather see a man.
Wouldn't matter to me whatsoever, as long as they're confident. It would not faze me one bit.
Next, real quick, vacation stunner. 29% of young travelers think relaxing is a waste of time. It seems millennials and Gen Z are more interested in taking a true trip or adventure than just sitting around getting room service. I agree. And by the way, don't vacation. You go to Peekskill, New York, October 20th to see History, Liberty, Laughs. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. This way I can meet you in person, and that'll be great, I promise. BrianKilmeade.com.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right. Hi, everybody. So glad you're here. It's been a busy week for a summer week. When they usually say most people are on vacation. A lot of people are in Chicago. A lot of protesters there, too. A lot of people focus on the DNC, this historic moment when Biden gets tossed to the side, has to pretend like it's not that bad. You're watching the real-time breakup of Obama and Biden and Pelosi. And Kamala Harris has got to keep the ship together for 75 days and hope no one asks her any questions and she becomes president of the United States. Then we're all doomed because, believe me, someone's got an agenda for her to implement. They just don't want to talk about it because it's not popular. This hour, we're going to join by Mark Penn and Martha McCallum from Chicago. But first, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Over the coming days, we are going to do everything possible to, one, get Hamas on board with the bridging proposal, and then to make sure that both parties work on and agree to necessary details of implementation.
Secretary of State hopeful for a ceasefire deal over in Gaza. I am not, and I'll tell you why.
Number two.
But you look at radical liberal Kamala Harris. She's been the ringleader for this anti-crime and the anti-police crusade. It's a real anti-police crusade.
No, Trump not going dark. In fact, he's on the stump, upbeat, as we get set for an all-out sprint over the next 75 days as he awaits some policy to run against, to rant against, an agenda to compare. So far, we don't have much.
Number one.
We do not need four more years of bluster and bumbling and chaos. We have seen that movie before, and we all know that the sequel is usually worse.
I think he's talking about Joe Biden because it was the last 4 years, but is he talking about Donald Trump? Barack Obama last night. DNC day two belonged to the Obamas. Their message, let's go for change. Let's not go back to Trump. Do they not realize that Trump has been gone and the Dems have been in power? It was well delivered. It was came from the heart. But there was much more attacks on Donald Trump than I was expecting. But what about Mark Penn, CEO and chairman of Stagwell, does the Harris polls, senior strategic roles on electoral campaigns for Bill Clinton, Senator Hillary Clinton, and Prime Minister Tony Blair. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Mark, what was your takeaway from the Obamas yesterday? We know, I could just as expected, they're really strong speakers. But what about the substance?
What substance? they were really good speeches. They revved up the crowd. The crowd loves the Obamas. In fact, even the country really likes former President Obama more than probably you realize. But there was no substance. There was no Russia. There was no Iran. There was no Israel. There was no inflation. There was no crime. There was no. It was surprisingly, a speeches filled with I think, great platitudes, and they were well delivered, but they bore kind of little relationship to reality. And I think the most fascinating thing, of course, is that the treatment is of President Trump as the incumbent president instead of President Biden. That's what I think is fascinating.
So you saw the Media Research Group, you're a master of polls and studies, and they came out and they looked at how the networks have covered both candidates, Kamala Harris and Trump. 84% positive coverage for Kamala Harris, 89% negative coverage for Trump. Have you ever in your life seen such imbalance? You ran against the Bushes. You ran against Bush 41. You know, it wasn't easy for Bill Clinton to win re-election. Bob Dole was a war hero. You know, I understand the media used to lean left, but this far?
Frankly, you'd be surprised. Even when I was working with Hillary Clinton, we'd get frustrated every day because Barack Obama would get amazing coverage no matter what. So, But, yes, I don't think there's any question. St. Harris gets incredibly positive coverage virtually for everything she does. And whatever Trump says gets trashed day after day, you know, in the press. That is the reality of what's happening. There's no question.
Here it is. Cut 11.
One of the best convention speeches I've ever seen by anybody in any circumstance.
Before President Barack Obama spoke tonight, Michelle Obama gave one of the most rousing and effective convention speeches you may ever hear. President Barack Obama, he's a pretty good speaker, very good speaker. He's rarely had to follow a tougher act than that.
President Obama is unmistakably extraordinary, as you said, an orator.
Okay, you got it. Listen. All right. But it was crazy. I was not expecting. This is my answer, but you're the expert. My answer is I didn't expect so many direct attacks on Trump. Do I expect you to go against your opponent? Absolutely. But just the attacks on Trump kind of surprised me.
I wasn't really surprised by that. Again, it's a political convention. You know, I think they gave good speeches. What surprised me was not the attacks on Trump. What surprised me is acting oblivious to a world situation that is on the brink of hostilities, scrubbing the word Israel from virtually every speech.
Yes, good point.
I mean, things like that really were atypical. You would normally have people talk about what they want to do and what the party really wants to do, you know, in real ways as opposed to, you know, freedom, whatever that's supposed to mean. So I do think that to me was more of a surprise. It didn't surprise me that Trump was attacked. I mean, hey, it's a political convention.
So there's a few things that's going on. If you're Trump, you just weather the storm until Friday, right? 75
yep.
days left. You just realize that you're going to get beat up for 4 days. So tonight, Bill Clinton speaks. Do you have any idea what his goal would be? Or if you were running the convention, what you'd want Clinton to hit?
Again, a lot of these things are, in fact, engineered by this. Having done this, generally the central group that's planning tells everybody what they're supposed to say, what talking points they want. So obviously they want to play up the bio and qualifications of Harris. But, you know, President Clinton, he likes to talk about substance. He likes he avoids kind of gross platitudes. So if anyone is going to talk about the real situation in the world and what we face, it will be President Clinton. If it's not him, it's a very different President Clinton from the one that I know.
So, in other words, but they'll tell him to avoid Israel because they know what's happening outside the building. They know what Bernie Sanders said yesterday. Basically, he wants this ceasefire to end. He's always been anti-Israel, in my view. So, having said that, will they avoid the Middle East, which is the hottest of the hotspots?
I'm sure he's been told to avoid the Middle East, but hey, he's President Clinton. He can do what he wants.
So I was at an event where he was speaking, and I see Joe Lockhart there. He had been out of office maybe 6 years already. And these guys are writing in marker, marking up a speech, going back and forth. And I'm going, what's going on? I go, do you still work for Bill Clinton? He goes, well, we have to put a speech together. It's not done. So we're editing his speech up until the last minute. I mean, literally, they were on the way there. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And he nailed the speech. It was fantastic. But these guys were sweating it out. Like, you never stop working for Bill Clinton if you ever work for him. So do you think it's written? Is it his speech to have written it already?
No, it is. When we did State of the Unions, we were editing in the limo to the Capitol Hill. And we were just lucky to get it in the teleprompter on time. And having done some of his convention speeches with him too, yes, you can be assured that it is going down to the last minute. People are arguing about, do we mention Israel? You know, look, you had some quotes on about Israel. The Clintons, both of them, have been very pro-Israel because they tried negotiating with the Palestinians. They got Israel to offer everything, just as Blinken got Israel to agree to everything, and they found the other side never really does nor wants to agree. And that fundamentally changed them, and I don't know whether Blinken and Biden are going to wake up here that Hamas is not agreeing to anything, you know, no matter what they do.
It's kind of interesting, Mark. I'm watching. They just rolled a clip of yours on the Faulkner Focus while I'm talking to you on television. That's very on radio. It's very interesting. So now something you're really going to be intrigued with, I know, and that's the subplot here. and that's RFK Jr. Here is his running mate, Nicole Shanahan, talking about the decision they're going to have to make together. Cut 40.
It's Bobby's decision. I came into this supporting him wholeheartedly to win this election. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, there's only one party that has obstructed a fair election for us. And unfortunately, it was the Democratic Party. They've mm-hmm. done everything they can, including creating PACs to prevent us from being able to have ballot access. It's a really hard decision, and we don't come to this moment lightly. We come to this moment because in every single decision we make, first and foremost, we want to make sure that we are representing the best interests of health and wellness of young people, children, and future generations.
And now the money shot. Cut 41.
I would fully support it. I would fully support a strong partnership dedicated to this issue. A lot of people comment that in his first term, he didn't accomplish many of the things that that mothers really were hoping he would do, made some big mistakes around the pandemic. However, I think that he is sincere. I do. I think that it's a tight race right now. I wish that we had had a chance to debate, that we had fair representation in the polls. I wish we had a chance to be on stage, because had we likely would have won this election.
But he said, I wish he would support being part of the Trump administration. Trump yesterday said, I would make RFK part of my cabinet. We know they talked during the RNC. I think he's heading that direction, Mark. What would that mean?
I think that could be worth about a point for Trump. I mean, I don't think they'd be able to pull over the 4 or 5 points, but I think probably he'll get, his vote makeup has been a little bit more from the Trump camp than the Biden camp, but I do think it'd be significant, and I do think that the Democratic establishment in many ways went so far in protecting President Biden that this is just, an ignored part of what was done here to prevent real primaries. And RFK is rightly steamed up about that.
Right. I mean, has that really sunk in that 14 million people came out to vote in an uncontested election just for him, except for Dean Phillips? And they all just were told, yeah, that's not going to be him. That's it. That person just got 500 delegates on the telephone, so now she's a delegate. Do you talk to Democrats that are ticked off about how this went down?
Actually, Democrats are relieved. They were being arm twisted into something they really didn't want, and so you really don't find that Democrats are angry about it. But I think there was clearly also, in addition to kind of the concealing of the state of President Biden, there was some political actions directed at any other candidates to prevent them from having a full and fair hearing that might actually have revealed all this a lot earlier and might have resulted in a fair process. But Democrats are not upset. They're relieved.
So do you believe this will be a one debate? Kamala Harris right now has agreed to one debate. You think it's one and done?
Regrettably, it seems that way. I mean, I think every presidential campaign should have 3 debates, including one on foreign policy, that our democracy, requires informed voters. And I'm really quite upset about this. But yes, it does look to be like one and done.
And right now, who's winning?
This race is a toss up in the polls. B, it's the Democratic convention. Democrats are supposed to get a bump. The best day of the campaign should be, Friday and over the weekend. So don't be surprised. There's usually a 4 or 5 point convention bump. The question is, what do people say when they sit around Labor Day weekend? And what do the polls look like, say September 10th? That will really tell you how this race is trending.
Right. And if you're Trump, what should your focus be on Friday, beginning Friday?
Beginning Friday, everybody knows that there are clear, or they believe that there are clear issue differences. And what Trump hasn't done, I have a very interesting question. Do you support open borders? 70% said no. I said, do you think Kamala Harris supports open borders? 70% said yes. Okay, so they're not voting that way. So when I did like the 3 a.m. ad or so forth, what I did was I made it relevant to the average voter. So
Trump's job, if he's going to win, is to make these issue differences what we call salient to the lives of average voters and not just policy papers. And I don't think he's connected in an emotional way on these issues yet. And maybe he will, and maybe he won't. And, you know, look, and the others, they're going to run a very smart campaign treating Trump like he's the incumbent and he's to blame for everything that happened, right? And it's going to be a race down to the finish.
Right, and there is enough policy discrepancies where it should be pretty easy for someone to make a decision. It's not as if, you know, they're both two moderates running. It's just not
well,
the case.
And remember, two-thirds of the people are unhappy with the direction of the country, unhappy with the economy, and only 40% approved of the Biden administration. So Trump's got a lot to work with.
He does.
And, you know, but whether or not he wins or not, I couldn't tell you at the moment. I mean, obviously he had defeated President Biden. But he's got to run on an entire second presidential race here. And obviously that, I think September 10th debate is going to be probably the most critical day of his campaign and hers.
I think I'll watch. Mark Penn, thanks so much, CEO and chairman of Stagwell Inc. At least you don't have to scramble and write Bill Clinton's speech tonight. So at least you can relax now that you're the CEO. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
All right, back in a moment.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And it's almost a joke to me that they held it in Chicago, which has become the murder capital of the United States of America, thanks to very failed Democrat leadership. I mean, I believe last weekend in the city of Chicago, you had something like 40 shootings and 17 people who lost their lives. That is something that we would not accept in a third world country, much less in one of our beautiful, great American cities like Chicago.
It's true. J.D. Vance on this morning with us on Fox and Friends. He's like, why are you having it in Chicago? I thought that from the minute they named it. I mean, we had Donald Trump, when he was president, was offering the National Guard, not because of the George Floyd riot, just because of the South Side of Chicago, people just killing each other. And it might be too much for cops who were being vilified because of some bad incidents in the past that were getting all these people retiring. See, can I bring the National Guard for you? And of course, Mayor Lightfoot said, absolutely not. And Governor Pritzker said, you got to be kidding me. Give me another hamburger and a bowl of spaghetti. I'm eating. Please don't bother me. And he gets ignored. And now you go into an area which clearly has issues. Put it this way. When one thing happens, when you bring in the Stanley, you know, let's say your team wins the Stanley Cup, it's great news for the town. You know, the Orioles around Camden Yards, they have a little city there in Fenway Park. When they get to the playoffs, when you have a convention or a Super Bowl, it's supposed to be a boom. Do you know what they were selling? They're selling particle board to board up people's buildings. There's companies out there because they didn't want to get ransacked by what was thought to be up to 100,000 protesters. Now, there's not, but there's some problems. Crime is happening all around the city. Yesterday, Mike Tobin was witnessing a hostage situation, nothing to do with the DNC. But crime's a huge issue there. But, of course, Pete Buttigieg says crime is down across America. Exactly. That's in between carjacking episodes.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
For all the incredible energy we've been able to generate over the last few weeks, for all the rallies and the memes, this will still be a tight race in a closely divided country. A country where too many Americans are still struggling.
That is President Obama last night delivering a great speech. There's not one person on the planet who didn't think he was going to step up to the plate. He feels most comfortable on stage, as did Mrs. Obama. Fantastic. I was personally surprised. Mark Penn, who was just on with us, wasn't. How many attacks on Trump, how many personal attacks on Trump, and how they were just trying to make America believe that Trump was just in the office or is actually president right now. But they're in denial about what really happened to Joe Biden and in denial of what Kamala Harris has really accomplished, I believe. And it's up to the Republican ticket to define it.
But last night was a powerful speech. But what was it like being there? Let's ask Martha McCallum, anchor of the story, and you see her all around the channel and co-anchoring all of our election coverage throughout this election season. Martha, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. Great to be with you.
All right. I don't want to lead the witness. What was it like? I know you're not surprised to hear Barack Obama give a great speech, but what do you think? What's your takeaway?
Well, you know, I mean, they have a very excited crowd here. People have waited 2 and 3 hours online to get in, which I'm not sure is a function of enthusiasm or a function of dysfunction in terms of how they're organizing things here, because, you know, I mean, it's a good size arena. They have had a lot of logistical issues, I think, with getting people in and out the door. But that said, everybody stayed until the bitter end. They were really excited, obviously, to see the Obamas. I think they are the marquee event for the week, which I thought was fascinating. I also think that, you know, I thought President Obama's speech was like not as great as some of his speeches have been in the past. I thought Michelle Obama was very strong, but I'm just listening to what you said in the intro. What really struck me is all this talk about sort of integrity and taking care of each other and strength and kindness and what good people look like and sound like versus bad people and what they sound like, which was clearly the way that they were characterizing former President Trump. You know, and I also thought that Michelle, she said, you know, she talked about hope in the beginning, and she said, everything's magical. You know, it's all magical now, and everything's exciting and magical. She said, you know, these feelings have been buried too deep for too long, and tonight hope is making a comeback. And I thought, wow, what about the Biden years that she just skipped over? I guess she considers those part of the, you know, dark period that buried hope for too long. Also so interesting that Kamala Harris was not here last night, and the reporting from Jackie Heinrich that the reason is because the White House is still so sore over how this all went down and thinks that Obama was behind with sort of the moving a mechanism that got that in action to oust Biden, that they don't want her. It's a bad and uncomfortable feeling for them to see her on stage with them. So a lot of impressions from last night, but those are what stand out. A
couple of things. Do you realize how much Kamala Harris benefits from both? So Biden says, I want, you know, if it's not going to be me, I want it to be you, because I want my legacy to continue.
Right.
And number two, you know, Barack Obama says, listen, I've been endorsing him for 20 years. So it could be her.
Yep.
So they're both men are going to go to bat for her, but she's going to keep both of them apart. And it just goes to show you this is totally logical. However, it's not that she was just in another place. She was in another packed arena of 15,000 people,
right,
90 miles away where the RNC was. That's not easy to do, to pack an arena. Why is she having such an easy time, do you think, Martha McCallum?
I think it's just an enormous relief rally. It's like, you know, taking a big bag of sand off one side of a seesaw, and it just goes flying into the sky. I think there's so much. I think they thought this was going to be like a funeral dirge. I think, you know, at one point they wanted to do this whole thing kind of in a virtual way, a remote convention, some sort, which we all saw last time around, right? I think that the depression was so deep around having Joe Biden as their candidate that the opposite impact of that is extraordinary. I also think that Harris has proven to be very good out there. I think she has surpassed everyone's expectations in terms of being a magnetic politician, right? I mean, you know, she was out early in 2019. She's had almost 4 years of experience as vice president since then. And she's really sort of hung back so much during that period. And people have criticized her, obviously, on the things that she could have stepped forward on and chose not to. But she's done a lot of, you know, foreign policy meetings, going abroad to participate in those as vice president. And I think that she's been watching it all very closely. And I think that just the being tapped, having Biden say, I don't want to see a messy process. I want to endorse my vice president. And that was sort of his final act as president, really. I know there are things he wants to accomplish in the next few months, and we'll see what they are. But I think that was the one thing he had control over. He could say, no, I don't want this messy convention process. She's the vice president I chose. she's my legacy, even whether we like each other or not. And I think that relationship has improved over time. I pick her, and that just, you know, confidence and having someone give you that, that boost that she got from that, it's all over her face. You know, she's enjoying this. She's doing well out there. And that's why you're seeing this extraordinary reaction.
And now I think this is as good as it gets. On Thursday, will be as good as it gets. Friday, the real 75 days starts. You'll be there every step of the way. I get it. But after that, you know, she gave us a shot at what she stands for last Friday. Mm-hmm. And you have this business background. You must have been flabbergasted at the whole the going to find out about, you know, what they're doing with price controls.
And yeah, absolutely.
And now we find out about a possible wealth tax, raising the corporate rate up to 28%.
Yep.
As someone who's trying to be non-controversial and just coast to November, that was a heck of an opening shot that made her seem extremely left.
It sure was. And, you know, I think that she was under pressure to be specific about something. I think that it got a terrible response when you have the Washington Post and the New York Times saying that this is, you know, economic gimmickry that will fail. That is not a good entrance onto the specific issues stage, which is what she was trying to do there. Will she dial it back? I don't know. I mean, it's very difficult. The price controls thing, I think, very hard to make that happen. You need to have a lot of coordination from Congress. And I just love the idea that somehow the government's going to suddenly be sharp at deciding who's raising prices unjustly in businesses across America and how to punish them for it. It's just an enormous expansion of the arm of government. And, you know, the one thing that we're not hearing about, we hear all this sort of, it's a lot of feelings. It's a lot of emotion, a lot of,
joy.
You know, we all want to feel great about America, you know, all of these sorts of things, right? But you don't hear people standing on that stage, whether it's Barack Obama or Michelle Obama, talking specifically about, for example, how do we improve education in this country? How, and Trump did bring this up at his convention in terms of how low we are in math and science. This isn't just kiddie stuff, like, oh, our kids don't know enough. These are the future leaders of the country. And we see time and time again that they're not ready. They're not competitive. They're not on the cutting edge. And it's because we're failing them so dramatically. So you hear this, you know, last night Michelle Obama said, oh, well, Trump wants to eliminate the Department of Education, as if the Department of Education is this laudable entity that is saving our children's future and their education. They're not doing that at all. They're protecting labor unions and hurting our children and been, frankly, just lazy in terms of helping them catch up from COVID. So, I mean, you know, we've got Tim Walz tonight, a teacher, a governor, who had levers both as a teacher and as a governor to help elevate his students in their state. And they typically have had a good, you know, good education system historically, down 10 points in math, down 10 points in reading. So, you know, the specifics are short, and I think that's really problematic. So we'll see.
Right.
You know, this is their week. They get to, you know, the balloons and the music and all of it. It's great. It's good. You have to engender good feeling, and you have to inspire people like Michelle Obama tried to do last night. And, you know, when you look at Trump versus Harris, I think you got to look at Trump versus Biden. Biden beat him. And she's got an enormous amount of enthusiasm around her. And she's a more, you know, sort of overall attractive package. So,
but,
you know, this is a real battle on both sides.
You know, I think the country's changed so much in 2024.
Yeah.
For example, if you said Sanctuary City, I think Sanctuary City is a good, it's a debate. If she's going to sit there on stage on September 10th or tomorrow in an interview, if she decides to sit down ever, and say, how do you feel about Sanctuary Cities? How do you feel about giving room, mm-hmm. board, education, and everything else to illegal immigrants who come across our border? I mean, good luck with that answer, because I know exactly where Trump stands. How do you feel about our ally, Israel? Don't you believe what Douglas Murray says, that if you want to blame anyone for innocents dying in Gaza, you should blame Hamas? They started it October 7th. Where do you stand, Mr. Trump? You know, or where do you, you're going to see the dichotomy and no couching. You're going to see, no, I stand by Israel, but we got to avoid civilian deaths. Well, that everybody wants to avoid civilian deaths. So there are some issues that she doesn't want to answer now where she was on another side. And I'll give you the best example. Right now on fracking, If you say you're no longer against fracking, then why is all LNG leases on pause right now in America, despite That's us right. pledging to help our allies, because they usually buy from Russia? So if you are against, if you are not against fracking, why did you stop it? Unless, of course, you weren't that hands-on vice president that you said you were and that the president said you were.
Yeah, I mean, that makes it difficult, right? Because either you were sort of just sitting back in that vice presidential office and not doing what you yes. could to influence policy, or it's your policy and you can't get a fresh start and say, you know, look, I'm going to do all these things on day one when you've had more than 3 years, 3.5 years to put these things into action. So you really can't have it both ways. And also, you know, because we have, it's so extraordinary, this whole election cycle. I mean, you just think about the fact that, for one thing, in the beginning, we had two presidents running against each other. This is not a normal election cycle. We don't have this. We don't have the opportunity to look at someone who was president, another person who was president, and decide which one is going to get a chance to do another 4 years. Usually you've got one fresh face yeah. on the scene. So now the dynamic has changed again. And the fresh face on the scene is the person who was the vice president of the current president and has been there for a while, but is trying to present themselves as something completely new. And you're right. You know, when you look at her stances on immigration, you know, just all of the things that haven't happened, her backing of rioters in Minneapolis and bail funds to get them out and back on the street. She's very flip-floppy. I mean, you know, you go back to her original AG race in California, and she's tough on, you know, tough on crime. And I remember hearing someone on The View, one of the ladies on The View, say, well, she couldn't be like that during the George Floyd situation. Like, how can you blame her? She had to be anti-cop during the George Floyd situation. And it's like, does anybody expect anyone to, you know, you heard all last night about, you know, integrity and you know, Truth. Being good to each other and yeah. seriousness and you know, how smart everyone is and kind to each other. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, first of all, these folks just stabbed, you know, their former vice president in the back and pushed him out of office. And, you know, so that's one form of kindness for the country, I guess. And, you know, second of all of this discussion about Kamala Harris's many different varieties of policy, it's very difficult to nail down. I was just watching one of the those, which I think are pretty priceless, all these Don Lemon sound bites on the street that he's been putting out. And he was asking people on the street, all of this obviously anecdotal, but it's surprising in many ways. A lot of the women he was asking, they're like, I think she's kind of phony, you know?
I know. I saw that.
I don't know who she is.
Well, yeah. I mean, and it's up to Trump to do it. It's, you know, if we could sit down with her and do it, we could analyze her sound bites. But she is not sitting down with many people. And if her sit down is going to be with Rachel Maddow, I don't know how much we're going to know. So what's her sit down going to be before September 10th? And it's I could sense people are getting a little restful because they don't know what she stands for. And, you know, I was just reading that book, The Amateur by Charles Spearing, just to mm-hmm. get an idea of what she's about. Not many people have written about her. And she had a year ago, she had 32% approval rating. She's done right. nothing to change that except for not be Joe Biden.
Right. But, Brian, what do you think about the fact that, you know, that Joe Biden beat Donald Trump from a basement? There's so much anti-Trump sentiment out there, and these folks have worked so hard to fuel it. That was another thing that really caught my attention last night when Michelle Obama talked about how mean Trump had been to the Obamas and how he tried to instill fear. He tried to scare people about us because we're smart and we're educated. And I thought, you know, there's been an undertaking to instill fear about Donald Trump since he had the audacity to beat Hillary Clinton.
I think it's a good
you
question.
Know, that project has been underway yeah. since day one.
I mean, so that disappointed me so much, Michelle Obama bringing that up, that this guy, black people scare Trump, really, at this point?
Yeah.
We really think
I just,
that?
Yeah.
And, you know, is that in between him getting awards from Jesse Jackson? So the other thing, I know Trump's not playing the perfect game, but he's not a racist. I hate to tell people. My last thing, we only have 30 seconds, but my answer to your question is the only reason he didn't win was because a pandemic hit and people thought that he was to blame. They didn't like his response. They didn't like his actions in the last lap. And the guy that was clearly addled didn't have to campaign. He wasn't Trump. But they look back at his 4 years, and I think he's more popular now than he ever was since the day he came down that escalator. So maybe that's not good enough to win, but I would say that his numbers are better now than ever when he did win.
We will see. It's going to be it's going to be a really interesting. Actually, the concentration of this period is going to make it all very exciting and fun to watch.
It is 75 days. Martha will watch you at 3 o'clock today, and then watch you all night with your analysis. Martha McCallum, thanks
so
much on the story at 3. Does a great job. Back in a moment to wrap up the hour.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And J.D. Vance, he writes the foreword for the architect of the Project 2025. Look, you can find joy in the world everywhere. Here's where I find my joy. On October 1st, we're going to have a little talk, he and I, on the same stage. So,
that is Tim Walz. The governor, the Mr. Everyman, the coach, the governor of Minnesota, he's going to go head-to-head with J.D. Vance. And believe me, if there's one prediction, I'm going to make it right now. He will get destroyed. And the main reason why is not that J.D. Vance is a better talker and smarter. Those things are probably true. It's because J.D. Vance is going to memorize his background. He's going to make him try to answer for the way he handled the pandemic, the way he handled the George Floyd riots, the way he handled becoming the transgender number one attraction around the country, putting tampons in boys' bathrooms. All this stuff he's going to call out, he's going to underline. It's going to be impossible for him to excuse his way out of it. Now, the only thing he could do is say, I'm proud of what I did. I'm proud of waiting 3 days to watch the city burn. I'm proud of having transgender bathrooms. I'm proud of putting tampons in these bathrooms. I'm proud of the education dropping 6 points under my regime. You could do that. So I am not impressed with this guy. And by the way, he's had 3 major faux pas in 2 weeks. J.D. Vance did some podcasts maybe he shouldn't have. But since that time, he has been fantastic. Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.